Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the post-match show on the Royal Blue Podcast channel. My name is Ian Croll, I'm your host, and I'm joined by the Everton FC reporter Joe Thomas, who is live at Old Trafford following Everton's defeat to Manchester United. Joe, another disappointing afternoon for Everton.
Yeah, absolutely, and really, really frustrating, to be honest. Obviously, lost 2-0, damage all done in the first half. Look, they started this game pretty well, to be honest, I thought. They came out the traps quite quickly, and they pressed with quite a lot of intensity. And in the first 10 minutes, my United really, really struggled to kind of pass their way out from the back, and then Garner was snapping up balls, and Evan got the first corner, got the first big chance when Godfrey and Onana nearly combined after latching onto a loose ball. Andre Onana just about managed to clinch it and clear the danger. And you looked at this side and you just thought, we know this Manchester United side is vulnerable. We know there's a little bit of chaos around the likes of Beto and Doucouré. And it might be a good combination, a good matchup for this Everton side right now. But unfortunately, as this game kind of developed into an end-to-end match, Everton just they undid themselves again. They're their own worst enemy at the minute. Two goals, two silly penalties. I mean, look, I'm in the ground now. I've seen some replays from difficult angles. I've snatched at them. They both look like penalties in real time to me. They both look like penalties from what I've seen. And they were just daft penalties to give away and to cost Everton in a game, which I think that without them, they might have had a chance of getting something away from this game.
Yeah, I mean, just on your point there, Joe, with regards to the penalties, I mean, unfortunately, I can tell you that I do believe that they were definite penalties. There's no arguments with regards to those decisions. I don't think there's any complaints whatsoever. And I think you're absolutely right. I think Everton did start well. It looked like they were, you know, ready and really up for this game. I think United were caught a little bit cold. And then, unfortunately, two kind of, you know, I've seen a lot of people describing Tarkovsky's challenge as a bit brain dead. And you could probably say the same for Ben Godfrey as well. You know, to be jumping in and kind of lashing out like that and to give two penalties away when we did start well, when we looked like we were in the ascendancy, is really, really disappointing.
Yeah, it really is, because I mean, look, this side has talent in it. We know that. We know it has resilience. We know it can fight hard, and we know, especially away from home, it can get results from games that it's not going to dominate the ball, and games against sometimes more illustrious opposition. But what they've got to do is they've got to stay in those games first. And I think this Everton side at the moment is losing too many of the big moments in matches. 80% of what it does, from one box to the other box, is actually pretty decent. And throughout the 11 games that they've gone in the league without a win, with the exception of maybe Wolves, certainly the Wolves game, with the exception of that, most of them Everton have done pretty well in. But they just seem to have got into this nasty habit over the last four games. I'd start with Crystal Palace, of just getting the big decisions and the big moments wrong. I don't know if it's tiredness, I don't know if it's fatigue, if it's exhaustion. I mean, I'm halfway through writing my match report at the minute, my match verdict. I think my main takeaway is going to be that This break probably comes at a good time for this Everton side. It's been through a lot on and off the pitch over the past few months, and I think that's probably taken its toll. But in the last few weeks, what's been really, really frustrating is that Everton have had the opportunities to help themselves and they've not taken it. And okay, look, Man United have created some good opportunities that they haven't scored from here. There's an end-to-end match before they got the first goal. There's an end-to-end match before they got the second goal. You know, I'm not saying Everton were necessarily going to come away from here with a victory, but it was a game that they had a chance of taking something from. It's a game they've taken nothing from, and they've taken nothing from because of bad decisions made in big moments by their own players. And that is what is so frustrating and so galling about this. It's not as if this is... This feels so different to saying, like, the Lampard side when he went 8 without a win before he left, and it just felt like a side that had no resilience. You know, he'd suffer a setback in a game, and then that'd be it; it'd be gone. This side, it feels like, you know, even after the first goal, they still came back. They still had some good chances. They made Andre and Anna work quite hard. Harrison had a chance at the back post, got inside Varane, couldn't quite extend his leg and reach and prod it home, but he was nearly there. You know. Which got Garner forced Onana into a good save. Beto blasted one over. They did have some opportunities, but again, they undermined themselves because, yeah, they just like in the home game against Manchester, after going 1-0 down, they played quite well, didn't take their chances, and then they conceded a daft penalty, and that's ultimately what killed them. And really, look, I mean, I've just been looking at, I've gone onto the BBC website, and it said they haven't had 23 shots, and the BBC headline calls Everton wasteful, and you know, they did have opportunities. I'm not sure how many clear-cut opportunities they have, and really, if I'm being honest, look, Dyche might and Everton might want to spin this game after the final whistle. You know, press conferences will be coming up shortly and say that they lost 2-0 because of two penalties. Actually, there was nothing in this game, and it could have gone either way without them, but I'm not really convinced it could have done, really, because I think with some of those chances, particularly Garnacho's two in the second half, I think really it was probably closer to being Man United scoring a third or a fourth than Everton scoring a first or a second. And I don't think that it would help anybody if Everton kid themselves over that.
It's the same old story over and over again, Joe. And we don't know what Sean Dyche is going to say in his press conference, but he tends to do a positive spin following a defeat or a draw. You know, you're spot on there. It was over, I think it was 23 shots, albeit, you know, nowhere near as close to that on target. I think the possession was slightly imbalanced. I think at one point we were actually ahead. We had more possession than Manchester United. You know, we've got an 84% pass success ratio. A number of touches compared to Manchester United is a lot more as well. But again, it seems to be the same old story again, where Dyche could spin however he wants. We're getting into good areas. We're creating chances. But really, like we can't keep going on like this, can we?
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
No, it is frustrating. It does feel like I'm telling the same story after most games here. And Everton side, it isn't a million miles off from being a reasonably effective Premier League side. I mean, really, it is. You had the 6 points back on, and they are mid-table. And I know the last few months have been bad, but when you look at everything from the overall, from the overview, from the complete perspective, you go, well, you know, it is a competent Premier League side. But for whatever reason, at the minute, they just can't quite seem to get the things right in both boxes. And look, they've had 6 shots on target. I mean, one of those was a bicycle kick from Onana that had no threat of going in from the edge of the area. And a couple of others were relatively comfortable saves. Like the Corey forced Onana into one at the near post early in the second half. And I think that, you know, probably the closest they came was a shot that wasn't on target. Lewis Dobbin came on in the second half, flashed one across the face of goal. It nearly went at the back post. Calvert-Lewin almost managed to prod it in at the back post. You know, they were so close. It was a bit unfortunate. They were close to getting back into this game, but I don't think that it's a game they can necessarily come away from and make too much of an argument. So they deserve something from it, because again, they've made bad mistakes at big moments. And really, again, you know, it's horrible saying this, but your ball hit Mekalenko's arm at the end of the first half in the penalty box. I thought that could have been a third penalty.
I think that should have been a penalty.
Yeah, and Garnacho had two really good chances in the beginning of the second half as well. So the game could really have been out of sight. Pickford made a brilliant save from Fernandes in the second half as well. He pushed it just wide. And then from the following corner, there was a bit of a goal mouth scramble, and Pickford had to save again on the line. So, you know, Like, it's just, it's another really, really frustrating kind of conversation that we're having on the final whistle right now. And, you know, don't need to go through the stats too much. And so I'm just looking around, just getting distracted. A few people in the director's box taking photos. And so frustrating.
You're not that famous, are you, Joe?
It's so frustrating seeing happy football fans at the end of the game and not wearing blue shirts, because once again, the away end, we're very, very good again today. And, you know, I think the real thing that frustrates me here is, or one of the things that frustrates me most is the fact that, again, this is a game that Everton have shot themselves in the foot. And also because of that, you know, they once again concede the opportunity to the rivals around them in the table to pull out, you know, to find their own momentum. I think Luton now play three times this week. Then they play three times before Everton play again. Now, look at the minute, the gap to the bottom three is 5 points. But, you know, if Luton were to go and get some good results, then we could be coming back for the Easter break, though, that doubleheader away at Bournemouth and Newcastle with the table looking quite nasty. And also, you know, I think probably expecting a deduction of some sort coming from the second case. So, really, what this story of the 11 games, when you take them as a whole without winning the Premier League, is one of a relatively resilient and competent Premier League side that just, you know, isn't really finding, you know, missing the luck in the big moments, missing that bit of quality. But the story from the last four games of Crystal Palace, of Brighton, of West Ham and of this game is of a team that just cannot seem to help itself. You know, it's created those chances. In, you know, you look at that Palace game again, you know, and that might be a game that haunts us for a while, I think. That side, Roy Hodgson and the managerial issues and, you know, the issues in the dugout they had, the four best players out injured, terrible form, come to Goodison on a Monday night and they almost snatch a win. You look at Brighton, Everton against 10 men going into stoppage time and they concede the equaliser. You look at West Ham, Everton 1-0 up and flying, already missed a penalty, already missed some good chances, but got that goal and they concede a poor goal from a set piece and they concede two goals in stoppage time. And again today, look, Man United did have good chances. I keep saying that, I know that, but ultimately the two penalties made the difference. And it was penalties that they were, you know, they weren't contentious penalties. They were two bad decisions from Everton players. And that's the frustrating thing. And I know for regular listeners of the podcast, you know, I've kind of said this a few times over the past few weeks, but for so much of the season, and even so much of the past 4 months, it's felt like the world has been against Everton. Things kept going their way and you felt that, you know, justified to be hard done by. But in the last few weeks, they haven't. If anything, they've kind of gone Everton's way. Maybe not so much in this game, but certainly the last three, Everton just haven't taken advantage. And we will now see over the coming week or so just where that will leave this club going to a break, which I think maybe is just the best thing for it. You know, I spoke to Sean Dyche about this on Thursday. He said he plans to make the players work really hard when they go on this European training camp this week. I don't think that's necessarily what's needed, to be honest. I think some of these players just need a break. A lot of these players have been injured either at the start of the season or at various points through the season. Those that haven't have been so heavily relied on because of the lack of squad depth that they must be knackered. I don't care what, you know, anyone says about having tried to kind of, you know, play this down, but there's no way that the instability around the points deductions and then the appeal and the takeover and all the uncertainty around that, that must really affect those players. You know, I don't think that they can kind of step away and look at this all in a vacuum because, you know, because they're human. Yeah, you know, they're not. Look, I do my job, and I'm sure everyone who listens to when they do their job, if there's uncertainty at the top ends, it might not affect my job directly, but I am thinking about it in my day-to-day life. You know, it does kind of have an impact, and I'm sure it'd be the same for these players because they're only human, and, you know, certainly the same for the fans. And just looking ahead to this 3 weeks, it just gives them 3 weeks just to kind of regroup. I don't know, just regroup, get some rest, try and distract themselves from football. Obviously work on fitness and tactics and things like that, but just try and find a way to get themselves back to kind of a base from which they can push on and lay the foundation for what's going to be a really, really, really important April. Really important April when you think of everything that's going to come up. And I know it sounds daft that we're talking about that because we've got a big march ahead, certainly off the pitch with things like accounts and, you know, second profit and sustainable hearing and takeover news and things like that coming. But for this group of players, they have to do it on the pitch. And the last 11 games, they've really struggled to do that. Whatever happens off the pitch, however good or bad things go, when the lawyers argue in the corridors of power and the politicians dispute and the Premier League try and make their case, whatever happens, fundamentally this group of players have to take their opportunities to solve these problems on the pitch. They're not doing it at the moment. they need to find a way of doing that in the next few weeks. And also, I think, you know, so do the coaching staff. So I think that, you know, there have been some decisions that I'm not sure that, you know, Dyche and his team have got right over recent weeks. There aren't many decisions he can make. He doesn't have many options. But, you know, I was surprised a little bit to see Ben Godfrey start at right back today. And I would certainly be surprised to see him start at right back in 3 weeks' time when Everton go to Bournemouth.
The player ratings then, Joe, I mean, Chris Beasley, our colleagues, put them out there, don't know if you've seen them, a few players didn't cover themselves in glory, you know, there was even a couple of fours there. Ben Godfrey, you know, obviously gave the penalty away, you know, a little bit of a back and forth over that, whether he should be playing right back. You know, he's not a natural right back. Seamus Coleman and Nathan Patterson, obviously the other options as well, but Mikhailenko, usually pretty solid, got a 6. James Tarkowski got a 5. Again, gave away the penalty. But are probably the attacking players in terms of Onana, Decore, Harrison, McNeil got a 7, but the likes of Onana, Chris gave him a 5. Decore got a 5. Harrison got a 6. They're the players that you're going to be looking at to creating those chances and scoring goals. Have you had the chance to look at Chris's player ratings, and do you agree with them?
I mean, I've not. I don't always agree with Chris on his player ratings. It's quite funny because I'm sure people probably think we do that, but quite often we end up arguing with him in the car on the way back. You know, I thought Pickford made some good saves. They obviously couldn't do anything about the penalties. So I'd probably have him as Everton's best player or one of them. You know, Branthwaite looked all right. You know, Tarkowski obviously gave away the penalty that changed everything. And, you know, Godfrey, the thing with Godfrey is, like, you know, like, he's not a natural right back. And if you in game, it's not so bad. He's got the pace and the strength to, you know, to do a job. But I think the problem is, and I saw it a couple of times today, just right down in front of us, you know, he gets the ball with space in front of him on the right flank. We know he's got pace. We know he's got power. And you just think, oh, just bomb on, just drive on. And then he gets to the halfway line or 10 yards past the halfway line. He checks back every single time. And you think that must be because he's been told to do that. Like, we know, yeah, Dyche isn't a side. He hasn't built this side on overlapping fullbacks and players surging forward to concede, you know, to leave gaps behind them. Obviously, he's a manager that likes to protect the ball and doesn't like to have transitions through which you can lose and be caught out, which has been a problem for this Everton side for a couple of years. But also, there's a bit of a lack of ambition. And I think probably, you know, look, we can all argue about that there isn't a perfect option for Everton at right back. I like the idea of Seamus Coleman. That's who I'd have picked today. I wonder if maybe there's been a few lingering fitness issues, and perhaps we might see him once he's had 3 more weeks to get back to grips with things. But yeah, the thing with, yeah, once Everton went 2-0 down, right back was an area where they could have unlocked a little bit more potential going forward. And at that point, you think, look, we can argue about who's starting and all that, but once they're 2-0 down, Godfrey already on the booking, Everton trying to find a way to get back into the game, why not bring someone like Nathan Patterson on? All right, you might lose a little bit defensively, but Everton need to get something out of this game, so why not be a little bit more ambitious and push him on and see if he can do anything to help the team going forward, add a little bit of a difference. That's probably where I'd have a look at it. Midfield, you know, Garner started this game well. Garner and McNeil, I thought, started this game well. And Harrison got in and about it. And we saw what he brings defensively. And one of the reasons why Dyche obviously likes him, made a brilliant tackle on Rashford at 0-0 when Rashford was kind of shimmying down the left and created a position where he had a good opportunity to score from. You know, it was brilliant from Harrison. And, you know, he was in and around on the edge of the area and they had a few nice moves at the end of the first half. That was probably the big opportunity that Everton had. You know, 2-0 down, just about to go in at the break, and, you know, Garner squares it for McNeil inside the box and he hits Varane with his effort, and you just thought that was a really big opportunity there. Really big opportunity to maybe come and change the mood going into half time, and instead they missed it. And look, this is the problem with trying to assess these things. I don't think that so much of this is necessarily anybody being terrible. I think it's a lot of it is just a lot of players doing all right, and doing all right is okay, so as long as you get the big moments right in each box. And, you know, when the ball falls at their feet, you know, when you're 12 yards out, they're not taking it. And probably what has been most concerning over the last few weeks is they're just not quite. There are too many defensive lapses. I don't know if it's a lack of concentration. Maybe it's just a bit of exhaustion. Maybe they're just a bit ragged. Like, I mean, look, it was a bad tackle from Godfrey to concede the second penalty. But don't get me wrong, like, Garnacho had ridden through half the Everton side before he got there in the first place. You know, that could have been stopped before it got to him. Which is a bit of the same scenario with the Zuma header and the dunk header against Brighton, which I know people will be talking about. Godfrey was the man marking both goal scorers in that case and could have done better. So there's a narrative here where on the one hand you can say Godfrey's been at fault for three big goals in three consecutive games. And OK, you could make that stick to some point, but he also deserves protection and for his teammates to take accountability and responsibility as well. And in each case, there are things that could have been done to have protected Godfrey before it got to those positions, and they weren't done. So I think this is more of a team issue than an individual issue. And like I say, maybe it's mental fatigue, maybe it's physical fatigue. Maybe the break will do this group of players good because they need to find a way of resetting, and they haven't been able to manufacture that opportunity themselves. They haven't been able to create the conditions, or when they have created the conditions, like at West Ham, they like against Brighton going into stoppage time, they haven't been able to take advantage and hold on. And maybe it just points to kind of just a bit of a wider issue in the dressing room and in the camp at the minute. And maybe it's just that this group of players are just knackered, exhausted. I don't want to be making loads of excuses for them. You know, they were mistakes that led to the goals, and they could have done a little bit better in front of goal at the other end, but that almost feels like where it is. They're stuck in a little bit of a rut at the minute. The momentum's all negative. 11 games in the league without a win. They're going to now have an awkward 3 weeks where they're going to have to do a lot of soul-searching, and the hope has to be that the soul-searching goes on whilst Luton and Brentford and Forest lose games around them, because if they don't, then the table will start to look worse before having to have a chance to make it look better.
And just finally then, Joe, for you, now Everton have got an anxious wait of looking out for the Luton, Forest and Brentford results, because obviously we're going to be desperate now for them to make sure that they drop points.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yes, it's going to. I mean, it's going to be an anxious wait. Of course, it is. And I think you'd have, you know, Luton are at Palace today, and yeah, it's an awkward game, but it's a game that they could get something out of it. You wouldn't fancy Brentford to get anything at Arsenal, but we'll have to wait and see. Stranger things have happened. I think just going on now, just having a look at what Luton have got coming up. So they're 5 points behind Everton with two games in hand. You go away to Palace today, away to Bournemouth on Wednesday, and at home to Forest on Saturday. That's three huge games against. Look, I don't think that Luton stay up at the expense of Everton without some help from other forces like the deductions and things like that. But if they're going to have a chance of staying up, then those are the games that they'll be targeting to take points from. And I think the hope will be that, you know, they only take one or two at most. But if they come away with four or five, then that'll be panic stations a little bit. And then Bournemouth and Newcastle are difficult games for Everton when they come back before what will be a massive game at home to Burnley. And, you know, a game that is obviously very, very winnable. And I would be confident that Everton will come out on top in that. But there's a long way to go before then. So I think that's the big frustration over the last few weeks has been the missed opportunities. Not just the missed opportunities that, you know, efforts on goal, but the missed opportunities to kind of keep control of their own circumstances, of their own battles, of their own, you know, narratives and things like that, keep things in their own hand. We all saw how much easier the win at Brighton and holding on for a point at Leicester did in the final weeks of in May last season. It just kept Everton in control of their own destiny. And as long as Everton can in control of their own destiny, then I think they'll be okay. But they're in danger of conceding some of that now, conceding some of that momentum, allowing other sides to kind of, you know, get an advantage on them, that then they have to start to work to, you know, to wipe out during a difficult fixture list in April. So, you know, it's going to be a tough few weeks, I think. Look, the side's still creating chances. They're not going down. They're not sinking in games. They have had some tough games in this period, and they've had some injuries as well. Like, there is still plenty, I think, to think that Everton will be all right this season, and you know, hopefully that will be the case. But again, they're missing opportunities to give us some. They're missing opportunities to prevent us from all having sleepless nights going from mid-April to mid-May, and I could really do without another relegation fight that goes through to the final weeks. I'm sure everybody on here listening would rather not.
We all could, Joe. We all could.
As well. And what these games are doing is they're not stopping Everton from staying up, but they're stopping Everton from being able to make life easy for themselves. That's the annoying thing. Everton have had a chance to make lives easy for themselves over recent weeks. Maybe not so much today, but yeah, they've been their own worst enemies, and that is the case today. Look, they might still struggle to come away from here something without the penalties, may actually still create good chances, but you know, we'll never know because they gave away two daft penalties from two daft tackles, and as a result of that, this game was probably largely over by 35 minutes. That's so frustrating because this Man United side is far from perfect. Fulham came here and won. Everton could well have done that. If they'd have got an early goal, if they'd have got a goal, if they'd have taken the lead, I'd have been interested to see what this place would have felt like. Because now, you know, it ended up feeling like a party atmosphere and people are going home smiling and happy from the home end. And it really could have been a very, very, a much more intriguing set of circumstances if one of those early chances had gone in, or if Everton had taken the lead, or if Everton even just, you know, found a way to get back level at one each and put the pressure back on the hosts. They weren't able to do that, and you know, we'll spend another 3 weeks thinking about that and thinking about Lewis Dunk's stoppage time header and thinking about West Ham stoppage time goals and thinking what might have been.
Okay, Joe, well, I know how busy you are and I know what all the work that you've got to do now, so what I'm going to do is, there's plenty of comments coming in because we're live. So if you want to head off and do what you've got to do, and then what I'm going to do is I'm going to stay on and just try and read out and answer as many of the questions as possible.
Well, give me the best three comments and then I'll go. I'll run it out and see if I can get Sean Dyche, but you know, just give me the best three. Come on, we're live.
Yeah, let's have a look. Okay, let me go through them. At what point does it become painfully obvious that it's a lack of goal-scoring ability? And that's from the Blues YouTube channel, a regular contributor.
Yeah, I mean, I think it already has become obvious, hasn't it? Look, I think, you know, Calvert-Lewin is a very good... I think Calvert-Lewin is a very good striker who will find, you know, his form again in the Premier League. The problem that we have at the minute is that Everton are playing under too much pressure for you just to go on without, you know, go on giving people a chance without changing things. This side is actually very good at creating chances. Very good at career, far better than it has been in recent years. The problem has been for a long time, for large parts of the season, particularly at the start and particularly the last 11 games, the issue has been taking them. And I think that the hardest thing, and this is where I have some sympathy for Dyche, is look, it's his job to create a team that creates chances and has the opportunities to win matches. And he is doing that. What he can't ultimately do is be the guy. He can't be the guy that makes sure he puts an elbow into, you know, Kurt Zouma or Lewis Dunk's rib cage as he goes up for a header and makes it harder for him in stoppage time. He's also not the player that can be on the end of that through ball or the end of that loose ball, bouncing ball 6 yards, 10 yards, 12 yards out. And that's something which, because of the financial situation at the club, because of the instability, he hasn't had the opportunity to address that properly. I know they committed to a lot of money in bringing Youssef Chimiti and Betton into the club over the summer, but even those were deals that were done in a certain context. That context was an Everton side that needed bodies, but as much as it needed bodies, it also had to get them in without being able to pay anything up front. And when you can't pay anything up front, your pool becomes a lot smaller. So look, I think finishing ability is a far bigger question at the minute than creating chances. That's a reason for hope in some respects. It's a reason for optimism, but it also is a reason for concern given how long it's gone on for.
Bit of a mixed bag, Joe, and you know, who's to blame for basically this result and probably the run that we're currently on. But Darryl Townsend on YouTube says, it shows what we knew all along, all the endeavour with no real quality or plan B to execute. No money to sort it out unless we sell players that don't really have much value.
Yeah, I mean, they do have players that they can sell that have got a lot of value. I think Onana and Brathwaite are one of them, are two of them. But obviously, you don't want to be in that situation. Last thing I want to be here as Everton reporter is sitting here at Old Trafford advocating selling players to places like this in order to try and improve the squad. But that might be the position they find themselves in the summer. I think the listener points out some important context and does it very eloquently. And I think that we have to remember all of this, that Dyche and his team are operating in very specific circumstances, and obviously their hands are tied to a large extent with who they can bring in and the players that they can use. But yeah, I mean, that sums it up. Look, this is a side that can do 80% of its Premier League job pretty well, sometimes very well. It's just the last few games have been those big moments in either box. I think that's probably been a big concern for me. It's less about the chances that have been missed or not taken. It's more of the fact that all of a sudden they've gone from a team that kept clean sheets to teams conceding one, sometimes conceding two. And that's a little bit of a problem, because if you're not scoring, well, I mean, God, it sounds, I know it's just so blatantly obvious, but You know, so once you concede one, you've got to score two to win a game. And if you concede two, you've got to score three. And if you can't score one, then that's a problem. I think, if anything, it's those defensive lapses that are more concerning to me than the attacking ones right now. And for that reason, it might be that this break is a good thing. So, look, I said for three, I'm going to go for two. I can see that Dyche is doing some of his TV interviews right now. So I'm going to see if I can nip off and catch him in the press conference. Right. Thanks very much for listening, everyone. And I'll catch you soon. Cheers, Ian.
Yeah, no problem. See you later, Joe. Bye now. Okay, well, that was Joe Thomas, the Echo's EFC correspondent. I'm just going to go through some of the comments now because you've kindly submitted and interacted with our Facebook Live and YouTube stream. So, yeah, thank you for that. Obviously, very disappointing afternoon. Everton 2-0 defeat against Manchester United. Two penalties. Started the game off quite well. Continued on. We had, you know, a decent possession. Got in good areas. Created a few chances, more than 23 shots, but nowhere near as much on target. So what I'm going to do now, just to finish off the pod, just to finish off the stream, I'm going to go through some of the questions that all of you have submitted. So Mike Donnan on Facebook has said, just F off Red Echo, have a day off. Thanks for that comment, Mike. We are all blues, just so you know.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Liam Floyd on Facebook says, Dyche out, I've had enough. Obviously a lot of frustrated fans now. Rightly so, 11 games without a win. Obviously a couple of draws within that time. However, you know, we are fast approaching an unwanted Premier League record for Sean Dyche and Everton, which dates back to 1994 of 12 winless games without a win. Last time Mike Walker was in charge and just before Joe Royal took over. So, yeah, not a great place to be. And now we are obviously anxiously waiting for the Luton results, for the Nottingham Forest results, which I think is tomorrow. Brentford play 5:30. So, yeah, I think Luton probably just after 3 o'clock now. So they've probably kicked off. Stay with the comments. Sam Stanley on Facebook. We absolutely suck. No one who can actually strike a ball. Pathetic. Emma EFC on YouTube. You couldn't make this up. Sorry, Emma, I can't swear with the emoji that you've used. Michael Thaysfield on Facebook. I feel for Dyche because no one can score. It's awful. And United were terrible today. Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree, but I also think Sean Dyche could probably do, you know, a couple of things a little bit differently. You know, I'm not suggesting I'm an expert, but let's face it, what he's doing at this moment in time is not working. Two, obviously, brain-dead decisions from two of our defenders today in Tarkowski and Godfrey to concede the penalties. Absolutely no doubt in my mind that they were both penalties. I think if that's, you know, the shoe on the other foot, then I'm absolutely screaming for that penalty. And if we don't get them, then you're going to be absolutely fuming. Let's go further down. Obviously, just disappointing. I genuinely didn't expect anything from today's game. And funnily enough, if you listened and watched the pod, the preview pod on Friday, I predicted a 2-0 defeat, and I did it on the basis that it was in the hope that Everton would actually win or get a decent result and prove me wrong, but they haven't. So, you know, I'm not going to say I told you so, but I told you so. The Blues on YouTube today was not unlucky. It was decided by quality to win penalties. Yeah, I mean, I think I've seen a couple of people say that on social media. I think United players are really good at winning penalties. There's no question about that. But I also think that the decisions to jump in like Tarkowski and Godfrey did, was absolutely brain dead. And, you know, I don't think it was necessarily, it was needed at the time. But people will have their own opinion on that. MEFC again on YouTube. In reference to Dyche, you can spin it all he likes. We could have played till midnight and would not have scored. Absolutely agree. I don't think we ever really looked like scoring, despite, once again, having the chances and getting into those good positions. Billy Simpson on Facebook, get him out. Again, it's, you know, all these Dyche shouts, you know, to get him out. It's tough because who makes that decision? No one at this moment in time is going to make that decision. And I think if results continue the way they're going, then yeah, maybe a decision is going to have to be made. But at this moment in time, I just don't think anyone is in a position to make that call. Perhaps Thelwell, but then he could probably submit a recommendation. But who does he submit that recommendation to? Farhad Moshiri, you know, is obviously still the owner of the football club. He would probably have to sign off on the sacking of Sean Dyche, which would mean some sort of compensation package. Let's face it, I think Dyche, we talked about this at the podcast earlier in the week, I think it was the Friday one. Dyche has got till the end of 2025 season, and his contract runs out then. So maybe the compensation package wouldn't be too much, but at the end of the day, it's still a compensation package. The Blues on YouTube joke went straight over his head. Yeah, I think I tried to make a joke to Joe when he was on the stream, and he just completely ignored it, which is fine. Let's have a look. Steve Barker on Facebook: defo not Sean Dyche's fault. We just can't score. Massive lack of confidence. Yeah, we definitely can't score, Steve, and it is causing a major, major problem. There was one comment which I'm going to go to now because I saw it earlier, which could be an interesting one. Let me see if I can find it, because the strikers are coming. So Steve Kimbrough on Facebook: strikers are pathetic. Time to give Schmitty a start up top. Nothing to lose. I mean, I just don't know too much about Schmitty whatsoever. I feel like he was bought as a player with potential, and we spent an awful lot of money on a player who's come in for potential. As far as I'm aware, it was £15 million. He's barely featured, and when he does feature, he gets like no more than 5 minutes. I think, without a doubt, our best striker, regardless of what people think of him, is Dominic Calvert-Lewin. He's technically better than Beto. He's a better player. He holds the ball up so much better than Beto. Okay, Beto started last week and scored. He also missed a penalty. He also missed a fantastic chance earlier in the first half as well. You know, have we bought a dud with Beto? Let me know in the comments. I just think, now that Decore is back, I mean, Decore was poor today. I think Chris Beasley, let's have a look at his player ratings. Chris Beasley gave him a 5. And let's just read this description of Decore, if it comes up. Here we go. Decore, okay, Chris, in his summary of Decore, has said, for all his usual hard running, Everton's top scorer still looks to be shaking off the rust following two separate hamstring injuries that have curtailed his progress in recent times. And while he has played the part in one promising first half attack that saw his centre go into Anana's arms, he found himself on the periphery of proceedings. I mean, probably spot on. Decore hasn't played well since his return from this hamstring injury, but we all know that he was plan A, you know, in that fantastic run of games where we won 4 in a row. And it was the partnership between Dominic Calvert-Lewin and Decore that seemed to be the spearhead of that. And we've obviously, you know, the momentum of that, we've just completely lost it, which is a shame. So going back to whether Schmitty should be in, I don't think so. I think what I would do is just bring Dominic Calvert-Lewin in. I know he's gone so many games without a goal. It is a massive concern. But let's face it, when we won those 4 games against Nottingham Forest, Newcastle, Chelsea and Burnley, Calvert-Lewin didn't score any goals in those games. It was the players around him, and it was because what he did to feed, you know, to feed the attacking threat for those players. So I just think, get Calvert-Lewin back in the team now. But let's face it, we don't know what's going to happen because we haven't got a game for 3 weeks. So Joe mentioned that they're going on like a mid-season break, pre-season type break. Potentially, it's going to be interesting to see what happens when they return, because these players definitely need a break. You can just see that they're dead on the feet, and it's when you're in that position, it's, you know, you start making bad decisions, you start making tired decisions, and it's a tough place to be in. Gonna carry on going through some of the comments now. The Blues on YouTube: only player that I've got hope for is Dan Juma, because he's got some ability. There's a reason he's loaned out every season, though. Yeah, I think, you know, once Dan Juma is back fit, Sean Dyche should get him back in the team. But I think there might be an underlying issue with his attitude. But we will see. Graveson on YouTube, Dyche is sucking the life out of this club with his pathetic nonsense, and it's affecting the fans and players alike. Stuart Slater on Facebook, Branthwaite did his best today, stands out in defence for me. And I agree, I think Branthwaite has been the standout player, standout defender and actually standout player of Everton's season so far. But the problem is now, we're not scoring goals and we're starting to concede goals as well, which is obviously a massive concern. Gavin Cunningham on YouTube just submitted the question, how Harrison and the Corey started today was mind-blowing. It's who else you put in there, isn't it? I think Decore is a first-team starter, without a doubt. Once he's fit, he's in there. I don't know the figures or the stats off the top of my head, but Everton win more games with Decore in the team than they don't. And Harrison, you know, I don't even want to go as far as to say the jury's still out on Harrison. I just think he's not very good. There's a reason why Leeds, Championship side Leeds, let Harrison go out on loan. It's because at the end of the day, for all his endeavour and potential and hard work, which Sean Dyche obviously likes, he's just not very good, which is a shame because he started his Everton career off quite well and now it's obviously faltering. But who knows, after this break he might come back stronger. Danny Rice on Facebook, the tactics kill them both. The only game recently you could say we had genuine missed chances was against West Ham. As for the core, it's him and Don that play well together. Yeah, Danny, I think I've just said that. Agree with you completely. Let's get the core and Dominic Calvert-Lewin back up top and see where we go. But like I said, we haven't got a game now for 3 weeks now. So the 30th of March is our next game. More comments coming in, Garner, McNeil and Harrison being way off form for many matches. And that's the problem, isn't it? I think too many players underperforming. We need, you know, at least 9-10 of our players to be on top of their game to get a result. The likes of Manchester United, obviously even the likes of the teams higher up in the league, they can have a couple of players who are not on their game and they can still win, you know, by clear goals. We can't be doing that. We need all of our players at 100% and at the races. Danny Rice again, Mascheri is killing us. Nobody to pull the trigger. I'm not looking for another buyer as 777 drags on and on. Yeah, I mean, I asked this question in the podcast earlier in the week. You know, is now the takeover debacle starting to filter down to the pitch, to Sean Dyche? I'd probably say it shouldn't and maybe no. But we know Sean Dyche did suggest that the ongoing appeal process, which obviously now has been decided for the first appeal, Dyche did say that, you know, it is affecting the players. Is the takeover now affecting the players? Who knows? I think there was a comment with regards to me suggesting that a couple of players, you know, we would rely on to, you know, get us up the pitch by scoring goals and, you know, creating those chances. I think I might have been the Blues on YouTube suggested Onana was an attacking player and that he's a defensive midfielder. Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think he is a defensive midfielder. That's where he plays. But I also think that we underutilise him as an attacking player. I think he could be more of in the mould of a Fellaini, like a Fellaini figure. We know what his attacking threat is up at set pieces, corners. You know, he scored a couple of goals with his head over the past couple of months that have actually won us points. So let's have a look. Any more questions? I'm going to finish off now otherwise, because Dave O on YouTube, drop Harrison, start Gomez, play Dobbin more, maybe even try two up top. Beto, Dominic Calvert-Lewin, anything's better than what I'm watching. I mean, anything is better than what we're watching, Dave-O. I think we drop Harrison for who? Because we're not going to play Ashley Young there. I'd rather Harrison be in that starting 11 over Ashley Young. Does James Garner drift out wide? You know, he did put that cross in for Beto's goal. Gomez was obviously unsure whether he was going to be fit today. Obviously, he did come on. I think Gomez has obviously got the qualities as a really good player. It's just whether he can stay fit, and he's never consistent. Probably Dobbin. I think, you know, if you're gonna put someone out there over Harrison, I'd probably agree with you and say maybe Dobbin. I'd probably go with that. Naturally, he's probably not a right winger though, so should he be getting played further forward? Either way, you know, he would bring pace. He'd bring something different, wouldn't he? Let's face it. And two up top, I think we've tried that, didn't we? I think we've tried that twice this season, and it hasn't worked. Most recently against Luton in the cup, we were absolutely terrible. I think that's going to bring the end to the pod. If you're only just joining us, we are live, but once we finish, you can watch it back. Me and Joe Thomas, the Echo's Everton FC correspondent, had about a 20-25 minute conversation. Joe is, or was, live at Old Trafford. I'm in the Royal Blue studio. We're live on YouTube, we're live on Facebook, so you can watch that back. Continue to put your comments in, by the way, and I'll take a look after the stream is finished. More than happy to respond. But yeah, very disappointing afternoon for Everton. I don't think anyone expected a win, but the fact it's the way we went about losing the game to concede two penalties, which, you know, at the end of the day, I've got no complaints about the penalties whatsoever. You know, they were deserved as such. You know, they were stone cold penalties. But yeah, just a reminder to everyone, please keep showing your support. Subscribe to the Royal Blue YouTube channel. Leave us a comment. Like us on Facebook. It's Everton FC Liverpool Echo. We will be back with more pods in the week. I've been Ian Krell, earlier joined by Joe Thomas. This has been the post-match Manchester United show. And unfortunately, Everton have been beaten 2-0. And are now with a bit of anxiety looking over the shoulders. So yeah. Thanks everyone for joining. I've been Ian Krell, and this has been the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.